welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Red FM. I'm Ciarán Regan. Lauren Gilfoyle's in studio as well as Roar's off on his holliers today and tomorrow. Coming up on the show tonight, we're going to look back on Munster's disappointing loss to the Saracens. We'll also look back on Cork City's very disappointing loss to Munster rivals Waterford last night as well. We'll hear from John Caulfield, and hopefully we'll have a Waterford point of view as well. We'll hear from the Cork Minor Camogie team. They've reached the All-Ireland final next week. We'll also hear some Cork County Championship action, and we'll hear from a retired referee and assessor at international level who retired this week after doing Man United and Barcelona. It's all on the way in the bench. Welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Red FM. I'm Ciarán Regan, and Lauren is in studio as well. Very busy show for you. Very busy day of sporting action as well, Lauren.
Yes, so much to talk about today, and I think first of all we have to talk about rugby, where Munster's Heineken Champions Cup campaign has come to an end. They've been beaten 32 points to 16 by the Saracens at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry. A 63rd minute Darren Sweetenham try broke the Saracens' momentum, but Billy Vinopola crossed the whitewash just soon after, capping the English side's victory, with Vinopola then picking up the man of the match accolade. Munster head coach Johan van Gran said afterwards their opponents were just too strong for them.
Yeah, they showed their class today. I thought they started the game well. Put us under pressure straight away. It was a fiercely contested first half, and you know, the 13 minutes after half time swung it their way. They put scoreboard pressure on us. You know, we did well to get back into the game with that try, but you know, their ball carriers were just too good for us.
Leinster face Toulouse at the Aviva tomorrow for the second spot in that final.
Disappointing for Munster, Lauren, today.
It was, but I suppose they had a tough task from the outset, and when you're missing the likes of Joey Carberry and Keith Earls, it's always going to be a tough task, but yeah, whatever the opposition.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Johnny Holland about that very, very shortly anyway.
On to the Premier League, where it was a very busy day, and in the early kickoff, Man City beat Spurs 1-0 at the Etihad, reinstating United back to the top of the table. Already relegated Fulham had gotten their first win away of the season. They beat Bournemouth 1-0 at the Vitality, Alexander Mitrovic scoring from the penalty spot for the Cottagers. Two goals from Gerard Deulofeu have given Watford a 2-1 win over already relegated Huddersfield at the John Smith Stadium, while Leicester City have come away from the London Stadium with a point after playing out a 2-2 draw with West Ham. Wolverhampton and Brighton finished up a scoreless draw, while Newcastle and Southampton are currently underway at St James's Park.
There's been a goal there, actually, Lauren. We'll go straight to Stephen Goldsmith.
Newcastle 1, Southampton 0, and Ayoze Perez has given the home side the lead here. A well-worked goal created by himself. He picked the ball up from 25 yards from goal, turned his man, worked his way into the penalty area, and finished very neatly into the bottom left-hand corner. The home side score first, Newcastle 1, Southampton 0.
In the SSE Airtricity League, First Division Cove Ramblers are about to take on Longford in just under an hour at 7pm, while earlier in the FAI Cup qualifying round, Avondale United beat Newtown Rangers 4-3 after extra time, Glebe North beat Middleton 2-1 and Malahide beat UCC 2-0 in the 3pm kickoff, while in the Munster Senior League, Ringmahon Rangers had a 3-1 victory over Leeds. And then to GAA, we're in the Cork Senior Hurling Championship today. There's a doubleheader in Riverstown. Douglas and Bride Rovers are underway since 5:45, and it is currently Bride Rovers 4-3 in that game, and that's followed up by Carrick Tuhill playing the Bars at 7:30, while over in Parky Rin, Charleville are currently facing Aaron's Own at 7 points apiece there with just about 16 minutes on the clock, and at the same venue, Blackrock are meeting Ballyhay at 7:30. In the Premier Intermediate Hurling Championship, Castle Lions play Yall in Ballinoe at 7, while in the Ladies Gaelic Football Little National Football League, Galway have beaten Donegal 112-15 at Pierce Park in Longford, and that was in the Division 1 semi-final. They'll play the winner of Dublin and Cork, who face off tomorrow in Nolan Park. The Cork Under-16 ladies footballers have qualified for the Munster Under-16A final following their clash with Tipperary today. Cork won out their 4-12 to the Premier's 2-12, while in Camogie, more success for Cork, where they have qualified for the All-Ireland Minor Final, having seen off the challenge of Kilkenny in Carriganore, that's the WIT grounds, this afternoon, 121-114. They now face Clare in that final decider, and we'll hear from manager Jerry Wallace later in the show. Tipperary also claimed the Littlewoods Ireland Division 2 League final today. They beat Kilkenny also 14-8, while Kildare saw off Limerick in the Division 3 decider. Back to local rugby in the Ulster Bank League playoffs. Bruff have beaten Middleton 38-28. While in golf, Shane Lowry is top of the leaderboard on 9 under par at the RBC Heritage in South Carolina. He's one shot clear of the field after his second round following a number of suspensions to play due to poor weather conditions. We don't have that problem here at the moment, Ciarán. And Graeme McDowell is 3 under, while Waterford's Seamus Power is a shot back on 2 under.
Yeah, we've been stuck in studio all day, but it's nice to be going out on it bright and still somewhat warm when we leave here today. You mentioned lots of action in the Premier League today. Just a quick roundup of those results. Man City beating Spurs. Unfortunately, if you're a Liverpool fan, good news if you're a Man City fan. Peter Smith was at the Etihad.
City 1, Spurs 0. City not at their swashbuckling best, but this a victory that they ground out. Phil Foden provided them with the match-winning header on 5 minutes from short range after Aguero had glanced over the centre along the face of goal. But uncharacteristically, they failed to create their usual glut of opportunities and needed keeper Edison to be alert as he made 4 fine saves. City 1, Spurs 0.
Yeah, elsewhere, also in action, say Fulham beat Bournemouth. Alan Lewis was at the Vitality Stadium.
Bournemouth 0, Fulham 1, a first away win in the Premier League for Fulham this season. An up and down match. Josh King and Ryan Fraser missed good chances in the first half, while Callum Chambers had an effort cleared off the line for Fulham. The visitors took the lead early in the second half, though Aleksandar Mitrovic fouled in the box. He got up and converted the penalty himself. Sessegnon came close to making it 2, while Fraser and Wilson spurred good opportunities to equalise at the other end. David Brooks clipped the crossbar and missed the volley from close range. Back-to-back wins then for Fulham under Scott Parker. Has he done enough to get the Fulham job full-time? Bournemouth 0, Fulham 1.
Elsewhere, an exciting draw between West Ham and Leicester. Guy Swindles was at London Stadium.
West Ham 2, Leicester 2. In the end, thoroughly entertaining match. If some of the football was a little careless at times. Antonio's thumping header gave the Hammers the lead at half-time, 1-0. But back came Leicester. Jamie Vardy, delightful near-post touch, 1-1. Substitutes were made. It would hit the post through Pedro Obiang, and there was Lucas Perez to touch home. Perez then had an effort disallowed for offside for a time added on. Harvey Barnes came through the West Ham defence and made it. West Ham 2, Leicester 2.
Elsewhere, Watford were taking on already relegated Huddersfield. It was Watford who came out with the 3 points. Joe Townsend was at the John Smith Stadium.
Huddersfield 1, Watford 2. This was all about Gerard De La Feo. A calm 5th-minute strike from close range after Jonathan Hogg's error sent Watford in, and a late second, which was a similar finish following a blocked shot. He now has 6 goals in 5 Premier League away games, added to his match-winning double against Wolves at Wembley to dramatically send Watford to the FA Cup final. It was time for a late-headed consolation by Carlin Grant, but it's a 7th straight defeat for already relegated Huddersfield, and 11th in 12 games under Jan Sievert. That is grim reading. Huddersfield 1, Watford 2.
Yeah, there you have just a quick wrap of today's action. But Newcastle have just gone 2 up on Southampton. Perez getting another goal as well. So it's now 2-0 in favour of Newcastle United there. Hopefully we'll have a score update very, very shortly from Stephen Goldsmith there. Now, starting off the show with some rugby. We'll be touching on Cork City in the next few minutes as well. But Munster defeated today in the Champions Cup, Lauren. Obviously a disappointing defeat, maybe some people expecting that result maybe somewhat, but still disappointing overall. But we'll be talking about that in just a minute. But earlier on, both of us spoke with former player Johnny Holland. Johnny, disappointing loss for Munster today against Saracens. What was your take on it?
Probably as expected, to be fair. The Saracens was a solid firepower, and to be fair to Munster, they did show up, and I thought at the start when Saracens started well, it could have been Munster folding, but they actually did stand up and kind of fight back, which was good to see. But I don't think you could see any other result of Saracens winning it in the end, especially just straight after half time when Saracens came out with their power game again. But like you see, at 53 minutes, there was a start, I think. Mm-hmm. So that 60 game line success, and Munster had only 10, so you don't really need to miss many tackles, and you'll end up walking yourself backwards to your try line.
What was it? I don't know, is it the right word, but was it surprising to see Munster keep with them for so long?
I don't know if it was surprising, but it was probably, like, semi-finals are going to take a while to break teams down anyway. You know, so it took them 43 minutes to break Munster down. I don't think that's that long, to be fair, in a semi-final. But Munster had a bit of a secondary fight in them as well, but at that stage, I don't think Saracens thought they were losing the game at all. But I think, like, as well, people like Joey Carberry was a massive loss. Like, Munster were much improved from 2 years ago. I thought they actually did compete, but they missed the creativity of Joey Carberry, would have just added another bit into the Saracens' defence, did something else, you know. So I think he was a big loss. I think Farrell stepped up. Someone like Craig Byrne probably didn't enjoy this game, but he's still a massive addition to Munster. And you see they are growing as a team, but they just need a small bit more. Disappointing for him to lose another semi-final.
Yeah, Owen Farrell on fire today from the penalties as well. I think it was at 6 of them he got for a finish. Might even been more, actually.
I think it was 7 out of 7 at one stage. He missed an 8th one, but I think he kind of played he just went about his job quietly. He wasn't like at the centre of everything, distributed it. You know, Munster tried to put him under a lot of pressure, but it didn't really look like it after you watched the game back. He was just comfortable enough pulling the strings and kicked his goals after the pressure told and they got their penalties.
Yeah. Come here, Conor Murray as well. He had a monster kick in the first half. Were you happy with his performance? He got a penalty as well.
Yeah, I think he's going back to his best. He's just tipping away nicely now and he's clearly a leader inside in that team again. I think the confidence issue, whatever it was, is well gone and he's starting to build now into a nice preparatory summer, hopefully. But I know there's some silverware still to go for Munster, but I think his form is something that we'll be looking at outside of Munster season.
And Johnny, towards the end there was a questionable refereeing decision. There was a yellow card handed out to Vincent Cock. Potentially might have been a red, deserved red?
I think it's a tough one when two of them are doing the exact same thing, but you know, there's only two yellow cards in it. So it is a funny kind of decision to have to make. We can't really yellow card both of them, but I don't know if it was enough to make it a red card on any one of them. But I think there were a couple of questionable refereeing decisions. I thought, so anyway, as a Munster fan watching it, but I don't think that was a winning and losing game, but there was one or two things in the first half I wouldn't have been too happy with if I was a Munster fan. But at the same time, I think it's not the losing of the game either.
Yeah, and Johnny, Vunipola was announced as man of the match. Without going into the politics of everything that's happened them all week, they obviously voted him the best on the pitch. Would you agree?
I don't think anyone really stood out for me massively as the runaway man of the match, so I suppose his consistency in getting over the game line and taking two or three sets of Munster eyes every time he had the ball is probably enough to hand it to him. But I don't know, like we were discussing at home, there was no one really stood out to me as running away as man of the match, so I don't think it was unfair to give it to him. But again, with the hype during the week, it was probably an added bit to give him that, and his 100th appearance with Saracens, it probably wasn't too far away either.
Yeah.
And Johnny, it's 7 defeats now in a row for Munster at the semi-final stage. They haven't reached the final since 2008. What are Munster missing?
Well, today I think they missed Joey Carberry, but I don't know if he was going to get them over the line either. Probably a little bit of attacking press. They brought a power game and a kind of a pressure game, but they didn't really bring a creativity to the game that would break someone like Saracens, you know. They've got a really well set defence, and you know they did come under pressure in the first half when Munster got into the 22. They gave away penalties, which shows that the pressure was on. But I don't think Munster looked like they were going to run from everywhere and score tries. But it's something they are getting better at. Farrell at second centre is bringing a bit more than just crashing him up the middle. He uses his feet; he's well able to pass the ball. But I think they're stepping towards a better attack game. It's just not there yet.
Okay, and like Johnny, Johan van Gran has signed a new contract recently enough, I think, so he's going to be there for another while. What can he do to get Munster over the line here, for the Champions Cup at least?
I'm not sure really, but I think the consistency is good for everyone involved, because chopping and changing, it just means you start a new system again and then you don't get there. Like I think the consistency might suit them, and you know, you don't know what way they'll turn up again next year with another year of understanding at the same level under their belt. But it's I think obviously they're going to have to find something different to do next year, because it's not going to be good enough to get them past the semi-final stage. If they have everyone fit, maybe they'll get past it with a bit of improvement on that game plan, but it is going to be a tough one.
Johnny, there was just over 16,000 in attendance there today at the Ricoh Arena. When we look back to the Aviva back in 2017, we sold out the Aviva. Again, it's a small attendance, but a huge Munster support and a very vocal Munster support.
Yeah, I thought it was strange looking at the stadium before a game. I was actually saying it, why isn't it full? Because it's surprising with a Munster team in the semi-final that the stadium wouldn't be full, but like that, the Aviva was full last year. And I know people have been trying to get tickets from everywhere, and I saw on Twitter and people were sharing taxis from different airports and trying their best to get to the game. So I don't think it was on Munster's end, to be fair, with it being over in the UK. So they did their best. You'd wonder why a stadium like that wasn't full, though.
Yeah. Well, look, obviously, Johnny, a disappointing loss for Munster, maybe. A lot of people maybe expecting the result anyway, but disappointing nonetheless. But thanks very much for joining us on the Big Red Bench this evening.
No problem. Thanks very much.
They have Johnny who spoke to us just a short while ago following Munster's loss. We'll talk about that in a second, but first, Stephen Goldsmith with that goal update from Newcastle and Southampton.
Newcastle 2, Southampton 0. Ayoze Perez with both goals. Good goals too. The first he spun his man 25 yards from goal, then worked the ball into the penalty area, finishing emphatically into the bottom corner. The second he slid in to convert a great cross from the left by Rondon. Before that we had Benitez spitting feathers down on the touchline. St James's Park erupted into a collective noise of fury as James Ward-Prowse chopped down Almiron as he raced clear of the defence. He was the last man, but he was somewhere out from goal, and referee Anthony Taylor produced a yellow card. Newcastle 2, Southampton 0.
There you go. Now, Munster's loss, we've already said, obviously, very disappointing, but they did put it up to Saracens in the first half, at least, anyway, Lauren.
They did. It was 12-9 at half-time. It was a game of two out halves or three out halves, I suppose, if we take into consideration Conor Murray. But when you look at Saracen's strength and depth, they have a ridiculous starting 15, a ridiculous panel, and I think that's probably what let Munster down, that they didn't have those world class players to bring on in the second half. We saw a glimmer of hope with Darren Sweetnam's try, but that was I suppose cancelled out fairly quickly. It's their seventh defeat since 2008 at the semi-final stage, and I think we heard Peter O'Mahony talking about moral victories and learning from defeats, and that he's sick of them. So I suppose it's now to Johan van Graan and his management team to look and see, well, what can they do to get on to that next level, to get to the next stage? Is it a style of play thing, or is it a personnel, I suppose, argument or discussion that has to be had?
Yeah, they were missing players today, including obviously Joy Carberry, who was a big loss for them.
He's a huge loss. He's been superb for Munster since his introduction at the start of the season. Like we've seen Tyler Blindell has had a fantastic season, and even JJ Hanrahan. He was brilliant against Treviso last week, so that obviously warranted his inclusion today as well. But yeah, Carberry, he's world class. Like he would 100% be starting for Ireland if it wasn't for the fact that we have Johnny Sexton there as well. So we're definitely spoilt in Ireland when it comes to out halves. But to just have his cool head in the midst of that kind of game would have been, I suppose, it would have been a couple of points anyway, at least. But like you're looking to Keith Earls as well, that the fact that he couldn't play today as well. Munster were brilliant in defence, probably lacked a little bit up front, and we definitely could have done with the Myer Ross man.
Yeah, well, look, they'll just have to regroup and drive on from there anyway, Lauren. Now, lots of talk at the moment surrounding Cork City and John Caulfield and everything. Cork City going on a poor run of form at the moment, to be fair. It's a very much changed team to the one that did the double 18 months ago. They were down in the RSC in Waterford last night. There was a lot of hope that they would get all points there. But I suppose after what happened Waterford this week, there was a bit of hope down there that they could drive on and get themselves back in a position to legitimately play in the Europa League. We'll talk about that in a minute, but first, John Caulfield spoke to the media after the game last night.
Is this that? I thought the first half were quite good. Yeah. Played well. I thought we passed the ball well. I thought, you know, we were lively and sharp. And, you know, I suppose it was still a tight match. Obviously, the chance where Graham had a volley from 8-10 yards out.
Yeah.
And McConnor saved it. Bucks taps in the rebound and he's flagged for offside. It probably was a great chance. But at the moment, we're not scoring goals.
Yeah.
second half they were a bit better. There wasn't still much in the game, but you know, a shot, took a wicked deflection off Dan Casey and deceived Mark.
Yeah,
and unfortunately that's just the way it's going at the moment.
Yeah, and that, like, I think it was the case that you had scored in that period in the first half when you were good. You know, it would have kind of driven the lads on a bit.
I think absolutely, because I think you look at their work rate tonight and their energy levels, which was outstanding. But at the moment we're just down in confidence and we're not scoring enough goals, and you know, it's just difficult when you have a new team, young back four, you know, young Crowley up top, and 18 years of age. You know, we're in transition, but at the moment every game in this league is tough, and there's no mercy for anyone. And
yeah,
you know, so confidence down a little bit at the moment, but you know, we have to work in the next 2 days to see if we rectify it on Monday.
And is it kind of like a chicken and egg situation that you're losing because you're lacking confidence, and then another defeat dents the confidence even more? Like, what can you do to snap out of it? You just need a stroke of luck to go your way, like the way that they've been going against you.
Yeah, and you have to create your own luck. At the end of the day, you look at the last three games, we make a mistake at the last minute against Pats, lose 2 points.
Yeah.
One of our senior players makes a mistake Monday night. One of our senior players. These things happen tonight. The coach takes the deflection, and you know, things aren't running. But you have to make your own luck at the moment. You know, we're probably not creating enough. We do get a few chances, we're not taking them. That's probably what's frustrating. But there's no hiding place, and there's no easy way out. Just get your head down and try and get your form back.
One bright spot was Darragh O'Connor came on. Will he be in line for a start Monday, or is it still a case of easing him back in?
We hope he would, but it's trying to ease him. He's been off for a while, probably medically needs another couple of weeks. But look, he got some game time, and thankfully he'll be on the way back. So is Shep. But you look at it, there was 4, 5, 6 players missing tonight. You know, Comerford will be back him for Monday.
Yeah.
Obviously Benno is touch and go. Josh Shepherd, I'm not sure about Colm Horgan, no. So there's senior players there at the moment that are out, and it's we could certainly deal with them, there's no doubt about that. But look at you know, as I said, get back on and go out Monday and give everything again and hope to get a good result.
And your level on points with Sligo, does that make it more important, or is it just a case that you just have to win no matter who you're playing?
Well, every game is tough, and I don't even know, it's clearly on the table. It's, you know, at the same time, you know, you could lose a few, which we are, and all of a sudden you could turn around and win 3 or 4 and you'd be right back in there. So I don't think it's from that point of view, it's just a matter that, you know, we're not doing well, we're at home Monday, hopefully we get a passionate crowd and that we can deliver a performance to get the 3 points and see can we kick on from that.
Okay, thanks John.
Cheers. I have John Caulfield, Cork City boss, speaking to the media after the match last night. A very dejected sounding John Caulfield as well. Things not going so well for Cork City at the moment, Lauren, but you can hear it in his voice, obviously disappointing.
Yeah, it's never good to hear that kind of disappointment coming from a manager. Obviously you're looking for that leadership figure, and when you're hearing words like that, it's obviously not good for team morale.
Yeah, lots of people looking for John Caulfield's head. Is that the right call? I don't know. I don't think it's just as easy as getting rid of a manager and bringing someone else in. Maybe expectations from supporters might be very high after Cork City have played so well over the last few years, and that double 18 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's all about context, and I think the Cork City fans have experience an awful lot of success, or just, I suppose, some very good performances over the past couple of years and reaching the heights and playing in the Aviva numerous times, and now to have to compare that to where they're at now, it's difficult. It's difficult for any supporter, for any team, I suppose. So yeah, it's tough times.
Yeah, it's obviously a very disappointing loss for Cork City there. They're back on the pitch on Monday against Sligo Rovers. So hopefully they'll be able to get some points from that. Just because, you know, when you get wins, when you get points on the board, the confidence in the team starts to get better as well. So hopefully against Sligo Rovers, they'll be doing much better. Their opponents last night were Waterford FC. I don't know if you see much about it, Lauren. Essentially thrown out of the Europa League because they're not the club management haven't been there. Essentially, you have to be a club for 3 years. Waterford are a club, what they're saying is, for 2.5 years. So now they can't play in the Europa League, and St. Pat's have got their place. St. Pat's contacted the FAI last week about it. So it sounds like St. Pat's ratted Waterford out. I think this happened Bowes and Derry City a couple of years ago as well, where Bowes took Derry City's spot. Same situation as well. but that has huge implications because you've sponsorship deals, you have players coming in, and you would have promised people, you know, we're going to be in the Europa League because you had qualified for the Europa League. So, you know, it's fair game to say you're going to be playing in it. And now that's all seems to be gone.
It's very difficult for the players. And as, again, the supporters, like all they want to do was go out and play a game of football. They've been training, obviously. Supporters have been going to games. And it's pretty much a technicality. And I think that goes across the board for a number of different sports. If you're going to, I suppose, be thrown out of a competition for a technicality, it's going to completely just mess with the whole mentality of the players and mentality of the supporters, mentality of the management. And it doesn't, it isn't a nice situation to be in, but I'm not sure what they can do.
Yeah, very disappointing for the Waterford fans there, but that could have driven the team on last night to get the points so that they can put themselves in a position on the table to drive on and put themselves back in the Europa League legitimately. Well, they did it legitimately in the first place, but anyway, just that little bylaw, it seems, in UEFA's rules that you have to be 3 years as a club to go into European competition before you can get the licence to do that. Now, half-time at St James's Park between Newcastle and Southampton, Stephen Goldsmith.
Newcastle 2, Southampton 0. Ayoze Perez, the target of the Newcastle Boo Boys earlier in the season, has the home side in the driving seat at half-time with two goals. The first was all about him. He picked the ball up centrally 25 yards out and drove into the area before finishing wonderfully into the bottom corner. The second was about the teamwork. One of his strike partner, Solomon Rondon, picked the ball up wide left and sent a delicious cross into the box. The Spaniard then slid on the end of that and dispatched past Angus Gunn. At half-time, it's Newcastle 2, Southampton 0.
Yeah, there you go. Some updates from around the county championship, Lauren.
Yeah, half-time over in Park Éireann and Éireann's Own are leading Charleville. It's 11 points to 9 there. While over in Riverstown, Douglas have a 6-point lead over Bride Rovers. It is 11 points to 5 points there. And both of those games are the curtain raisers to both doubleheaders.
Yeah, so exciting enough games, it seems, so far. We're going to hear from Bishopstown as well very shortly, and Father O'Neill's Bishopstown beating Newtown Chandrum last night in a highly entertaining clash for the neutral anyway, in Mourne Abbey. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But first, before we go to a break, Jerry Wallace is the manager of the Cork Minor Camogie team. They defeated Kilkenny today to book their place in the All-Ireland Championship Final. They are the holders of that. So it's good to be back there. But I caught up with Jerry a little bit earlier on while they were on the bus. So there may be some screaming in the background.
Get on your lives there,
are you? We are, Jerry. Come here. Obviously a very happy bus. Not in one yet, but you're into an All-Ireland final again.
We're back here, Ciarán. We're back to defend the All-Ireland final and to defend our All-Ireland title. And a very happy bus. We're just coming back in now to Dungarvan there after a wonderful day down in the WIT. Yeah, back in there again, Ciarán.
It must be a great feeling, you know, going back into an All-Ireland final, playing Clare this year around after they beat Tipperary. But come here, that game, Kilkenny were leading for a lot of it, and I don't know, Cork just completely took over in the second half. What happened there?
Yes, we lost the toss and we had to play against the wind. And if you were in the covered stand there, I think a lot of the spectators were saying it was a beautiful day out there, but there was a very strong breeze. We lost that toss and we were playing into it. So we were very happy at halftime. We went in 8 points to 1-9 to 12 points down at halftime. Mm-hmm. We were very composed and we were getting ourselves to the pitch of the game and we were doing very well defensively. We conceded a goal early in the game. But we settled and we got on top then, so we did. And we worked 8 scores in the first half, 5 from play and 3 from freeze. And then the second half, we've been doing what we've done all year. We've attacked up the game from the off and we delivered 4 great scores at the very start of the second half. Casey Coleman, Emma Murphy, Claudia Finn and Pino O'Leary, who had come on at halftime. The girls got us back into the game straight away. And then I think around mid half of the second half, then Fiona O'Leary levelled the game with a brilliant free from out around the middle of the field, and we drove on after that with a fantastic goal from Fiona Keating from Corsi Rovers. Mm-hmm. And for the last 10 minutes, then we got on top. Like, it was fantastic, Ciarán. great to be involved with it, and great to see the girls playing where they did today, like, you know.
Yeah, and like, I suppose the first game was a loss to Tipperary, I think it was, and you kind of drove on after that. So, like, momentum is certainly with you.
Well, it is, Ciarán, but I suppose the big thing there was when going into the first game this year, I was very unsure of the team. We had 9 of last year's panel left, and we had out of 31 girls here with us in travelling, and like, we had only 9 from last year, so. We were dealing with a whole new group of young women, and I think in the first game we didn't have the team set up right, and we didn't have the balance of the team right the first day, and we lost the game by 3 points. It was a very good performance in the second half. Like, we failed to score in the first half, and like, I've been coaching for a long, long time, and I never seen that happening in my own time with teams. So, like, had we got 1 or 2 points that day, maybe the result would have been different. But it gave us great motivation for the Wexford and the Dublin game. And then, like, unknown to everyone, the game that got called off, the Galway game, became a vital game. And even that first day against Tipperary, like, we were in a lead. So even though we lost by 3 points, to get a draw in Galway because of our scoring averages was going to put us into the All-Ireland semi-final. So, like, these girls have learned very quickly and are developing very greatly as tomorrow. So they are. I know they have a great week ahead of them. They're preparing now to stay clear on the All-Ireland final. So it's fantastic, Ciarán. You know?
Yeah, you touched on it there now, but the achievement is all the more sweeter, even considering that you had to. It was almost like starting with a new team again, having lost so many from last year's All-Ireland winning team.
It was, and what was very happening there today, I think there were 7 of the girls that won the All-Ireland last year were down supporting the team today, and after the match, they were out on the field. But that showed the enormity of what the task ahead was to get another team for Cork back in with a fighting chance, you know, on all Ireland final day. And I suppose dealing with this new group as well, Ciarán, they didn't realise that they had played under 16 Camogie and earlier years Camogie, and most of that takes place in the summer. So we had to deal the first day with 3 girls that were away on school holidays as well, because they weren't aware that the championship was actually in this time of the year, in a league basis. So, like, you know, we have, I think, and the finals, in the team that played today there now, going forward, even for next year, like, I think we've 9 of today's team are eligible again for next year. So, like, you know, there's a lot of, we've been working very, probably smartly with the teams as well, like, to try and keep the production line going, as I say, for Cork, like, you know.
Yeah. Do you have a bit of a break now until the final, or when?
Have very little break here. Okay. They're back to their clubs tomorrow. I'm releasing them all back to the clubs tomorrow. We're playing the All Ireland final against Clare next Saturday.
Okay.
The venue to be decided. It's running in because there were 2 games called off in our group. That lost the Camogie Association a week to give us a break. So look, we've a bit of support on Tuesday evening. We're going for a swim, and we're going to have a small bit of hurling and do a bit of Pilates for the girls that are going to do Pilates. And then on Thursday, we'll do a bit of training. It's all about freshness now, Ciarán. It's all about the recovery. It's all about turning up next week and representing Cork and representing the Rebel County with a good game, like, you know, against Clare.
And listen, why is there so much pressure to get it played? I know you have the provincial championships and all that now as well to play, but why would the pressure be on to get it done so quick?
It's the way that the Camogie Association have it set up. I think all the other grades from C, B and A in the minor Camogie grades are all played, and are all played on this weekend coming, the last weekend of April. It then releases the girls, and the replays are set for the following weekend, the first weekend of May. And what it's doing is giving you a clear passage without any interference from exams. So, like, if we were to win the All-Ireland next week and contest the All-Ireland finals, we are contesting. Like, all our girls are free then after that are doing leading cert to concentrate on the leading cert up to the end, you know, and into June. And then they come back to us in July for the Munster Championship. That's how this is going. We come back into our own province then and play in the Munster Championship in July.
Yeah.
That's to me, that, and it seems to be working very well. I find we had no interference this year. For the first game against Tip, the pre-leadings were on, and we had girls doing oral exams or whatever they are. So now we have clear passage from then right up to today and up to next week. To me, it works well for this age group. And as well, Ciarán, like, you know, when we are finished, this commitment, I can go to hurling matches and football matches and stuff myself.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you'll get a break to follow your own club.
You'll get a break from it in as well.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be down supporting Middleton tomorrow against the Glen. But, Jerry, a very busy week to ahead with lots of Pilates and swimming and a bit of hurling thrown in as well before an All-Ireland final next week. But, Jerry, was and the Cork Camogie team, thanks very much for joining us on the Big Red Bench.
Thanks very much, Ciarán, and thanks for your support again.
Yeah, there you have Jerry Wallace speaking to me a short while ago as well, before we came on air. They quieted down fairly quickly after the start of that conversation on the bus back from Carriganore at the WIT Arena in Waterford. Any updates on those hurling matches, Lauren?
Not that I can see as of yet. Still at halftime, I think, in most of those games. Yeah. Or maybe there hasn't been an update yet.
Yeah, halftime in those. And that brings us to halftime on the Big Red Bench. Still to come, we're going to hear from Bishopstown after their win last night, and we'll also hear from Pat Kelly, who was assessed his last UEFA match between Barcelona and Man United during the week. He's still going to be assessing though, but we'll hear from him very shortly as well. It's all on the way.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Yeah, welcome back to the Big Red Bench. Ciarán Regan and Lauren Guilfoyle here in the studio with you until 7 o'clock. Some updates there, Lauren, from the hurling.
Yeah, over in Park Urine in the Senior Hurling Championship, Aaron's Own 13 points to Charleville's 12, so that's back to 1. Whereas over in Riverstown, Douglas are still leading Bride Rovers 11 points to 6. And both of those games are just after kicking off into the second half.
Very good. Now, speaking of the Cork Senior Hurling Championship, there was two games last night, both in North Cork, one in Moran Abbey, that was Bishopstown, Newtown Chandrum, and in Mallow, Sarahs playing Kanturk. It was these Cork side who heavily defeated Kanturk, but in Moran Abbey there was a very entertaining game between Newtown Chandrum and Bishopstown, with Bishopstown winning the game by a point for a finish. And I caught up with their manager Mark Hogan after the game.
Yeah, very pleased, kind of, it was a great win. Poor start, they got an early goal, but we kind of settled, nobody panicked. We put Shane back kind of to sweep in front, and it worked well, thank God, and we settled well and kind of pushed on then after that.
Yeah, were you worried on the sideline at all about that, about the early goal? Because sometimes it can knock teams.
Like, we knew they were going to play two men from forward line, and we kind of had to trust who was there to handle that and kind of go man on man. But they had electric pace in there, so we just had to readjust really, but we were kind of prepared for that. So once he sweeped up, we kind of settled and it worked well.
They kind of were on top in the first half anyway, with high balls, especially Tim O'Man. He was picking everything out. Was that something you went in at halftime maybe and spoke about?
Yeah, well, he's always going to cause you trouble in the air. Like, he's probably Cork's best defender if you watch the league matches this year, and he's playing very well from centre back for Cork, so he was always going to be a threat. We kind of knew he'd be up in their centre forward line, and we kind of switched Brian Murray on him, a bigger man, and I can think Brian settled well in him, and he played well after that.
Yeah, a lot of young players as well tonight.
Yeah, James Scally made his debut there. He's very impressive. He's been going very well in the league. He was kind of involved with Christians this year, and it's brought him on an awful lot. He's kind of playing and training at that level. David Quaid, another guy, Cullen Driscoll, some great young fellas coming through, but like it's the older guys really that are keeping them calm and guiding them through it, you know.
There was a penalty there at the very end. What were the nerves like on the sideline? Because I suppose you kind of had to score it. There wasn't that much time left.
Yeah, I think we were 2 points down, so we needed the goal. We had to, and in fairness, who else would you trust? Ornie Packron, and he's stuck in the back of the net. Yeah. Brilliant.
Lots of young supporters there as well tonight for Bishopstown.
Yeah, it's great. We got two busloads down with us, so that just shows the work going into the underage with Vincey Murray and Pio Condon. These guys doing an awful lot, and in fairness to our players, they're putting it back in as well, and that's where you get it all coming together. They were brilliant for us tonight. The support was fantastic.
And look, lastly, you've obviously a long layoff now until the next round. I know your dual club said the footballers will be out after that game with Douglas, but how are you going to manage that now, because it's obviously a big break there, or are you just going to leave them off now with the
we're
football?
Going to take a break for a week anyway. We'll take next week off. The footballers now will take over for another few weeks, but that's just the way it is. And in fairness, we have that Tom Hayes is in charge of the football, and we have that great communication with them, because we've kind of a 9 or 10 dual players involved in both squads, so you just have to communicate, and that's working well for us, thank God.
unbelievable.
Yeah, there you have Mark Hogan of Bishop Sound speaking to me last night after a win over Newtown Chandrum by 1 point. Elsa Douglas taking on Bride Rovers at the moment. The latest score on that is Douglas lead 11 points to 5 at half time. Now, sorry, Lauren, go on.
There's also been a goal over in Park Urin. Aaron Zone now leading 1-14 to Charleville's 13 points. Doesn't give us an idea as to who actually scored the goal, but that's after opening up there for Aaron Zone.
Yeah, very good. Now, back talking about soccer or football. Pat Kelly, not many people may know the name. If you say Alan Kelly and Graham Kelly, you should know the family. Both referees, and as is Pat, or was, I should say, anyway. He's played, he's coached, he's refed, and he is currently advising referees at the moment. And during the week, he retired from advising referees on the international stage for UEFA. And not a bad game to go out on, Man United and Barcelona at the Nou Camp as well, and some fabulous pictures on Facebook as well that Pat got going around meeting all the players and managers and all that, or they were getting pictures with him, he'd say. But yeah, I caught up with Pat during the week just about his career. Delighted to be joined on the line by referees observer Pat Kelly, who's done it all, refereed, played, coached, assessed or observed, I suppose, at the highest level. Pat, you've just finished up with UEFA after doing Barcelona and Man United last week or during the week. How does it feel? Has it sunk in yet?
It has sunk in. I mean, I know going out there, Kieran, that it was my last match, you know. And thing about it is, I've had 21 years of it, and it was nice to finish on a match like that. But, you know, referee observers, the satisfaction I get out of referee observing is see people move from the lowest level to the highest level that he can possibly achieve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that all starts with even with local football, first of all, and you're trying to help young people along. And then when it goes into the UEFA circle, I mean, this great, no, Manchester United and Barcelona and all of that. But between all of that, you know, and you have under 17 European Championships, under 19, you have all of these, and you're helping young referees. And I get more satisfaction out of helping young referees at that level, under 17 and under 19, other than these Champions League matches, you know? I mean, the Champions League referees have made it to that grade.
Yeah.
And I can't do much for them, only to assess them and, you know, if there's anything that I need, that they need to work on, I can point that out to them. I mean, you know, a referee observer's job really is like a manager or a coach. He coaches young people and helps them to aspire to the highest level possible, you know?
Yeah. Like, you obviously had to go through processes to get yourself to that level. Talk to me about how you got into it all. I'm not going to say all those years ago, but I'm sure it doesn't feel like all those years ago.
Well, first of all, anyway, I was a bad player.
Okay. Like a ladder ref.
I retired very young. I started refereeing at 19 or 20, and I was refereeing, I was managing a schoolboys team, and a referee failed to show up one night, and that's how I got into refereeing. I just went down from there then. And when I was finished my refereeing career in 96, I was appointed to the local observers panel. Mm-hmm. And from there, the following year, onto the League of Ireland observers panel. And I was also appointed in 98 to the FIFA UEFA referee observers panel.
Yeah. Like,
so
it's obviously, it's very rewarding, the job you do.
Rewarding in what terms?
In observing and in helping referees, you know, get better in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, as I said, you know, the satisfaction referee observer gets out of this job is helping young referees to aspire to the highest level. And I get no more pleasure than looking at a Champions League match or a Champions League referee and say, I helped him when he was on the under 17 European Championships, and now he's gone on to the top level. And that's the satisfaction you get out of it, you know.
Yeah, and like you've obviously been to a lot of venues at various different grades down through the years. Do you have any favourite venue that you've been at? I suppose you'd be looked after at all of them you go to, but is there any that
stands out? I would, of course, yeah. I mean, what happens is that, you know, you fly out the day before the match. A liaison officer who is a former referee would pick you up and you'd meet the referees that evening, go to their training session with them, have a meal with them that night, and the following morning you attend the organisational meeting, and then you're with the referees would have a rest in the afternoon, and you go to the match with them and you assess their performance after, back in the hotel, and you know, that's basically it, you know. Yeah. But I mean, I've met great people down through the years, and I would have visited every country in Europe bar six.
Okay.
In that time, and you know, over 250 matches assessed at European level, and that's something that I look back on. You know, you don't think about it at the time, but it's good to look back on after, and to finish last Tuesday night in one of the best stadiums in the world was just unbelievable. You know, the atmosphere with 97,000 people, you know, and unfortunately I was a Man United supporter all my life, so it didn't make good looking or good reading for me the other night to look at the whole setup, you know.
Yeah, and like, oh, what would be your best memory over the years?
Well, obviously the other night would be the highlight.
Okay,
you know, but my first ever observation in Europe was a Champions League quarter final between Real Madrid and Inter Milan back in '98. Where the referee was Hugh Dallas from Scotland.
Nice.
And ironically, you know, he is one of the UEFA referees committee as well. Has a big part to play there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a highlight, obviously, starting off, and to finish last Tuesday was major as well. But as I say, I've been through many tournaments and that, and, you know, the fact that a mini tournament like is on for the best part of 8 days, and there are only 3 matches in the 8 days, and you educate the referees in with the UEFA educational programs as well.
Okay.
On your days off, you know.
Yeah.
And but I've met some great people, like, and I'm still very friendly with a lot of them that I met 20 odd years ago. So
yeah,
that's like, a good sign, you know.
When you're going to a match, no, Pat, and you have your book in front of you to observe the refs, what are you kind of looking out for? What boxes do you have to tick, per se?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, if they have a good knowledge of the laws of the game, if they can identify foul tackles for the ball rather than tackles on the players, you know, and they have to get these right. You don't get everything right, as you know yourself. You know, mm-hmm. There are always mistakes made.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how good the referee is, there's always this element of error, like, that, you know, it's natural.
Yeah.
You just can't eradicate everything, you know. Things happen, and you say, you know, after the match, when you're doing a self-assessment, you say to yourself, like, that happened now, like, but, you know, it's not going to happen to me again in the future, and things like that, you know. But personality,
okay.
Personality as well is very important, like, and I think when a referee can communicate with people in a nice way, you can't be a dictator or anything else. If you can manage people, you know, it's all about managing people, really. And there are certain times when you can manage a situation rather than take out the yellow card. It's the easiest thing in the world to take out the yellow card and put it over the fella's head. But to be able to manage a situation first is very important, in my opinion.
Yeah. Kind of on managing situations, we've seen some referees get abuse over the years. Well, it's always been there, and unfortunately it probably will be as well. Even they might be correct in what they're doing, players or managers or whatever it may be, disagree with them. There's a lot of that in the game as well. We saw last year before Christmas a referee in the Midlands was assaulted.
Yeah,
but it obviously affects new people coming into referee as well, and that can have a knock-on effect down through the years as well.
It does, of course. Well, I've had 2 very serious assaults in my career. Once I was refereeing in the school boys league, and I moved into junior football, and I was headbutted, had my nose broken.
Nice.
After giving a decision to a team, The incident happened outside the penalty area. He was looking for a penalty, and I was just explaining, no, it's not, it's outside the penalty area. And before I knew it, I was on the ground after being headbutted.
Yeah.
And the same happened to me maybe 8 to 10 years later. Something similar happened. And I was also headbutted in the League of Ireland match, would you believe?
Nice.
Now, when I say headbutted, there was only contact made with my head. I continued the match, and that, you know, I wouldn't regard it as a serious assault or anything, yeah. Not like the other two. But it didn't prevent me from continuing what I loved doing. My father was a referee before me. Mm-hmm. And I decided to take on the mantle when he passed away in 1965. He was actually killed in a road accident. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just took it on from there, and delighted that the boys took it up after me as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know.
We'll talk about the two lads in a minute, but you mentioned it didn't, it didn't put you off, obviously, but you have to have a lot of mental strength for something like that to not put you off, because you see young referees and there's things shouted at the sideline at them.
Definitely. But at the time, you know, the referee observer, I was here at the time, pleaded with me not to let these people win, and I decided to continue, even though, you know, it was traumatic at the time, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, I'm going to carry on, and there were no matches played down here for a weekend. There was a blanket strike on the referee's part because of what happened. And, you know, it's not that common nowadays, but yeah. The incident above in Westmead during the season, like, woke everybody up, you know, but that should have been dealt with, you know. The FAI should have taken that on board and made it more serious, and all the FAI were interested in that time was getting matches played at the weekend. You know, there should have been an example set that weekend for that referee, and then, you know, people would take notice.
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult to get people into refereeing, particularly at a young age.
Yeah.
And to see the likes of this, you know.
Yeah, and keep them at it then as well. One thing you've had to work with more recently, possibly, is VAR in the game. People still undecided, some saying, yeah, it's good, others saying, no, we saw it in use the other night in probably one of the most thrilling games of the year, if not longer.
That's right, yeah.
How did you find that, and how was it working with the refs?
We had it on the Tuesday night as well. We had one incident where a penalty was awarded, and it came down then that, you know, you need to review this again, and the referee went over and reviewed it and decided to overturn the decision then. You know, now, I'm not going to tell you what was right or what was wrong. It was my first time being involved with VAR.
Okay.
And I've seen it in the United States. I've seen a lot of matches over there. I look at their matches every week on television, and I can understand what they're doing. I'm a believer in it.
Okay.
Anything that helps the referee, I'm a believer in.
Yeah, Pat Kelly speaking to me there during the week. We'll hear part two of that tomorrow. Very, very interesting piece with Pat Kelly as well. So do make sure to tune in there tomorrow. Now, it's gone 2-1 between Newcastle and Southampton. Goal there coming from Southampton's goal coming from Lamina after 59 minutes. There is about 20 minutes left to go in that, and there's some updates in the Cork Hurling Championship, Lauren.
Yeah, in Park Urain, it's back to a 1-point game there between Aaronzone and Charleville. It's Aaronzone 117 to Charleville's 116, and there's about 25 minutes played there. While over in Riverstown, we're looking at Bright Rovers and Douglas, and there's about 20 minutes played there, and Douglas lead 13 points to Bright Rovers 10, so two pretty close games.
Yeah, that's about it for us tonight. I think actually Mark Hogan is the Bishopstown coach. I may have said Mark Hogan earlier on, just a slip of the tongue. But anyway, that's about it for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow from 6 o'clock. So Stevie's up next with the block party from ourselves. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.